Good morning and welcome to The Morning Voice. Today is November 4th, and if you still haven't set your clocks back, remember we don't move them, but the rest of the country has moved on. Sounds like the station here had a long weekend getting us all online.
Making life interesting for radio people, yes.
Wow, well, that's a whole other conversation one day for really why do we still have daylight savings time?
I know they're talking about eliminating it. Yeah, it's the current administration, right?
It'd make a lot of things a lot more simpler in life, and it's it's not used for the same reason, and it really creates a ton of confusion for people,
right.
Especially those few of us that live in states that don't touch the clocks.
Right, exactly.
But that's not what we're here to talk about this morning. We're here to talk about getting you involved.
Bellyache about it.
Yeah. Getting you involved, getting you engaged.
They did it one year. I was 67. I was a little kid, and I remember my parents said, you know, they were whining about how late the sun was up. So in the summertime, it makes for a late sunset. So.
Oh, it definitely makes a difference. I mean, I grew up in California, so we dealt with it all the time there, and it changes the way. I like the way Arizona does it. It makes life easy. You get confused when you wake up Monday morning yesterday and called up the stock market and said, how are things moving? And guess what? It's not open yet. So everything changes. It impacts our football watching on Sundays, 11 o'clock instead of 10 o'clock start times. I mean, whole bunch going on. But
how did Air Force do this weekend?
You had to bring it up.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Really?
Who did they lose to?
You had to bring it up.
I didn't know. I was not throwing that at you.
Shout out to the Wednesday host of the Morning Voice, Grant Kruger. He opened up
the good news first.
Yeah, he opened up Union Public House for those of us who wanted to watch the Air Force Army game.
Right.
So luckily, we had about 18-20 grads and family members for the Air Force Academy. So there was more of us than there were Army folks. Uh-huh. Unfortunately, Army won it on a last-second field goal.
On a last-second field goal. Wow, just like the Dodgers, last minute antics.
I love Grant, and his team's been great for us. Open it up early. But so far, Navy, about a month ago, at Union Public House at 9 a.m. in the morning, we watched them lose on another last-second score. They beat Air Force, so Air Force has lost to both of the service academies. No. So I appreciate you bringing it up, though, because we're on a roll.
I didn't realize this bringing up such a pain. I should have checked the scores first.
Yeah,
I should be like a lawyer, know the answer to the question before you ask it.
Well, let's go back to some of the good news you had in there.
Please.
Okay, let's start with the honor flight.
For
anybody who's not been out and watched an honor flight, either leaving to go back to D.C. or coming back, it is an experience that you've just got to see. Originally, it was done with World War II veterans, then expanded to Korean veterans, and now even some Vietnam veterans are part of this. They get a sponsored trip with a chaperone, who could be family member, could be somebody they have no idea who who they've never met him before, who's volunteered to go back and be a host, and they literally go on a trip back to D.C. to see all the memorials. They're given mail from that people have written thanking them for their service. It's just an incredible experience. And the turnout at the airport to go and the turnout when they come back is always amazing. A lot of the motorcycle bike riders that support the military show up with flags. It's just an amazing thing, and it really states a lot. So I appreciated you bringing that up. And it leads into something that we both were at last week, which the Morning Voice team did a great job turning out. And that was the kickoff for the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl luncheon.
The KVOI host between Kathleen Wynn and the Morning Voice crew, it was quite a turnout.
And one of the organizations that I want to bring out, since we want to talk about good things and not about Army or Air Force's football performances against service
academies.
Never
be mentioned again.
Is one of the awards, and I was honored to give the introduction for it, was for the Empower Coalition. A coalition of 46, I call them young because they're young compared to me, but various age men that came together in 2016 and put on an organization that's now raised over $4 million, predominantly through their beefsteak event, which is a huge, incredible event you got to look into. And one of the things they did, $4 million to support military families and veterans. And one of the things they did at one point was sponsored an entire honor flight. where they gave all the money required and for the plane to get back there to get all the services. And it's incredible organization. They were honored with the Volpe Tucson Strong Award at that event. And yes, that's a shameless pitch. Don't forget the Snoop Dogg Arizona Bowl, sponsored by Gin and Juice by Dre and Snoop, will be played on December 27th this year. So it's a little earlier, but it's a great fundraiser. Remember, all the proceeds from that bowl stay here local, go to local charities, and it's the only bowl in the nation that gives all the net proceeds to their local charities. So there's a couple good stories. Now, the Cirrus story, the plane that was saved by their parachute.
Right.
The parachutes are a new thing in small single-engine aircraft that they're starting to use. The challenge with it is, can you imagine being in a parachute? Yes, your engine quits or something happens. And when you are being in a plane, your engine quits, something happens. Yeah. For me and the Bonanza, I just have to find a place to land.
Yep.
No choice. That if the engine quits and it won't restart, I'm coming down to the ground and I'm going to land somewhere. On something.
Yeah.
So I'm hopefully going to find a nice smooth spot. But the way to ensure your safety is to have this parachute system. But could you imagine flying along in a little one engine plane? The plane quits, you go, oh no, okay, let's pull the chute. You pull the chute, and the next thing you know, you're generally facing straight down because it's all set in the tail.
Right.
And it parachute comes out, and now you're going straight down. Now at a slow speed, the plane's pretty much going to be totaled, but you're still living and alive. So the Cirrus is 139. That's amazing.
They said unharmed was the word that they used. Yeah. Not for the plane, of course. That's a different story. But they said the couple walked away from it.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that you can just walk away from that. And other good news that we can't not talk about before we get into election day and politics and energy and the Corporation Commission, last night's basketball game.
Oh, my goodness. So I didn't actually see but the last minute or two because I was busy. I got home just as the game was finishing up. But from everything I saw afterwards, it looked like a new U of A player took control of the game.
It was truly amazing. It was I would call it a combination between Jason Bradley and Koa Pete. They scored 57 points. We only took 5.
Yeah, Pete got 30 points. First
game,
real regular season game, right?
And I'll be honest, it was a quiet 30 because when they started talking about he's over 20, I'm going, wow, you know, because we were at Buffalo Wild Wings watching the game.
Great.
Interesting. I'll give the hardcore football fans credit because Buffalo Wild Wings was not even going to hesitate. They were playing the Cardinals football on The Voice. So we were not over the speakers. So the U of A basketball fans were purely watching on the screen. And truthfully, there was a much larger crowd there supporting the Cardinals than maybe were there for to watch the U of A game. But we did have a good crowd there yelling and screaming. And it was just, the team played really well, and Jason Bradley in the second half took over. There was a stretch run where he made three straight shots on drives, penetrations. The ball was in his hand. But between him and Koa Pete, Brandon Burris is going to have to figure out the college game a little bit, not because he doesn't have the capacity or the capability. Uh-huh. He can score and put numbers up. He gets in foul trouble. I've noticed that from the red-blue games, the exhibition games, and he fouled out relatively early in the game yesterday. So it's been it was an amazing game. Number 13 Arizona Wildcats, our basketball team here in Tucson, beat the Florida Gators, who was ranked number 3 at the time, and we're in a situation where this team has a lot of talent and could come together, and I'll tell you, Coach Lloyd has them playing an incredibly tough schedule. But last night,
Embry-Riddle
was a great start.
Was that part of the tough schedule?
That was an exhibition game.
Okay.
And yes, the next game's against Utah Tech on Monday.
Okay.
But I think we're playing three or four neutral site games against large
stinks for the
big schools.
It stinks for the season ticket holders.
It does. I don't like that either. But as we know, college basketball has become
a money game.
Money games. And teams to make those matchups in the preseason had gone away from playing those games, but you can justify it on a neutral court.
Right.
Yeah. And I'm not sure Las Vegas was really neutral last night. as we
not,
know.
Again, I saw the very just the closing minutes, and it was not neutral. The closing minutes.
Yeah, as we know, Las Vegas is sometimes known as Tucson North back in the Pac-12 days. So it sounds great. Let's get on the topic of voting today, Matt. You mentioned it. You brought it up. You said that today's election day. There's elections throughout the country, not just in Tucson, but the ones we're worried about is in Tucson.
Indeed, yes.
And we've already got a caller that I think wants to deliver an election message. Let's go to Kathleen Wynn, the chairman of the Pima County Republican Party, on line one.
Morning, Kathleen.
Good morning. And yes, the Wildcats last night, that was an amazing game. proud to be a Wildcat. And if you are in the city of Tucson today, we're asking that you go out. Voting centers open. I've been on the phone since 5:30 this morning already, manning and getting people out. And so we need everybody, if you live in the city of Tucson, to vote. We need to improve the city council by putting Janet Wittenbraker and Jay Tolkoff on the council to give just a new perspective to the city.
Kathleen, is your sense, based on the ballots that have turned in, what you're seeing come in, that there's potential this could be closer than many people think, and therefore their vote does count in the city of Tucson, which quite often folks...
It does, Ted. That's a great question. So what is going on right now is that we've seen a surge in the independents. What people don't understand is there's twice as many independents as Republicans in the city, and the independents have, in the last week, really doubled the number of people, and we're asking independents to vote. We're also hearing from Democrats that they're not happy with the status quo. So we've had Democrats come and take signs from the Republican headquarters for Jay and for Janet, so that's a good sign for us. And we know the Republicans are turning out. We are now almost at 30%. We're hoping to get to 40%. Typically, Republicans will vote on Election Day. We hope that they will. We've reached 22,000 voters yesterday by phone calling. And so we are full court press. We're hoping that we have an upset, just like the Wildcats last night. And so we're asking everyone to, even if there's lines today, please take the time to vote. It's so important. We need to change some of the things that are happening here. And the only way we can do it is to change out the people on the council.
Absolutely. And I appreciate all the work that you and others have done to try to help potentially make this change. But the key is you have to get out and vote. It's our most sacred right we have as citizens in this country. And we don't need to see a low number for the turnout when we make decisions on who our elected leaders are. So I appreciate you calling in and getting on. And as a reminder, Kathleen's also the host of Win Tucson, and you can tune in and listen to her at 9 o'clock as well.
I'll be there at 9 with another election update. So we'll let you know how it's going. And Ted, thank you for the opportunity. But really, we love Tucson. We want to bring leadership that just makes a difference and really listens to the people. And I think it's time. And I hope people have had enough of what we've had and they want to go a different direction. So today's that chance. And we did it with 414 just a few months ago. We said no to a sales tax. So those people, if you'll just turn out today and vote, we can change the future of the city. And I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Kathleen. And as always, your vote is critical. You need to do it no matter what it is. When we come back from the break.
You get to vote no matter where you live in the city. You get to vote in all three wards.
That's absolutely
all three wards that are on the ticket today.
And speaking of wards,
yes.
When we come back from the break, we will have Selena Barajas with us.
She is ready to go.
Candidate for Ward 5. And we'll talk to her about the process and how she's feeling on Election Day. You've been listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk station. We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host. Matt Neely's behind the glass, as always, trying to keep me on time and on target, as well as keeping me on target. One of the biggest U of A Wildcat fans, okay, my wife Katie, texted me and said, it's Jaden Bradley, not Jason.
Yeah, Jaden. Yeah.
So I apologize to Jaden. I know better than that, and I can't believe I made that mistake. But he did he took the leadership role last night. I think they on the radio named him the player of the game, and it was quite incredible. So at this time, I'd like to welcome to the show for the first time, and hopefully not the last, Selena Barajas. Good morning, Selena. How are you doing today?
Good morning. Happy Election Day.
It's got to be kind of a big day and moment for you, as I think the listeners are hopefully aware. You are running for the council member seat in Ward 5, and you were the leading vote getter by a pretty good distance in the Democratic primary, and there is no opponent on the ballot. However, that doesn't make this excitement or your continued effort over the last month any different. I appreciate you taking the time to join us today.
Oh, thank you for inviting me to be on this morning. Yes, it's been a journey, and I'm really excited and honored to be in this position.
So, Selena, I've got to ask, what is it that made you decide to run for public office in the first place?
Well, you know, there's been a few, I guess, aha moments for me. There wasn't one thing that made me say, okay, I gotta do this. But as a fourth generation Tucsonan, you know, as somebody with deep roots here, I have a master's degree in urban planning. I'm a mom. I'm an entrepreneur, and I was away for a decade from my beautiful hometown. And during that time of being away from Tucson, I miss Tucson, and I always thought about, you know, Tucson. And I'm actually here at the El Pueblo Center here in the parking lot outside the voting center. And it's a surreal moment for me, you know, as the first female to run and win here in Ward 5, and just having this opportunity to serve my community, this community that helped raise me. You know, I felt like it was time for me to put all the tools that I've been able to gather, all the experiences, and give back to this community. You know, when I saw our previous Council Member Richard Fiendis, announce his retirement, there was a part of me say, okay, maybe I could do this. I wanted to really reflect on entering this political realm, but I wanted to enter it with my full heart and mind and everything I had, because our community deserves somebody that's going to work hard for them. And I told myself, okay, as the new year was approaching, I said, I'm going to enter it in a new way. And that's when I decided to file my name. In January, I put my name in, and that's when I decided to run.
And here you are now on Election Day, looking forward, I'm sure, to this evening. You are truly a fourth-generation Tucsonan. You're a graduate of both Sunnyside and through in the Tucson Unified School Districts. You went to the University of Arizona, and your master's degree, as you mentioned, in urban planning comes from UCLA. So you've got long roots, as do your parents and many other family members who are also proud retirees or current employees at Sunnyside Unified School District. So you definitely have that connection with the neighborhood. What, getting to know your neighborhood even better during the campaign, what came to you as the biggest surprise about either the campaign itself or the process?
Well, you know, Ted, for me, it's been big. I've always been big on community engagement, no matter what I've done, no matter what hats I've worn, you know, from working in a youth center in Santa Monica, working in the nonprofit space, to working for city government and city of Inglewood, and returning back home and doing community engagement work from, you know, working with transportation mobility projects here with the city, to helping with city of South Tucson, and now working with an environmental nonprofit statewide organization here. Community engagement has always been something that I've been focused on. And now with this campaign, canvassing and door knocking has been a priority even up until yesterday. You know, even though I don't have an opponent, folks are still asking me, why are you still knocking on doors, Selena? You won, you know. I won every single precinct in the primary. So I want every single neighborhood And it's still important for me to door knock and to remind our neighbors, one, to vote, but also to let them know who their representatives are and that there is an election and that this election is a citywide general election. Because a lot of our residents, especially in Ward 5, don't know that there is an election. Ward 5 has historically had the lowest amount of voter turnout. You know, we were looking at our numbers this morning and just trying to see where they're at. You know, we've knocked on over 19,000 doors just within the Ward 5 area. And it's really important for us to get out the vote because it's not just our city council members for Ward 3, 5, and 6 that are on the ballot. You know, it's also the school districts that are on there and Plan Tucson. So that is really important for us to get out the vote. And it has been really surprising for me to just hear a lot of residents share that they haven't had that opportunity to speak to a candidate before.
Selena, so Selena, sorry about having to cut you off. Can you stay with us for one more segment after the break? All right.
Sure.
That's the voice of Selena Barajas, city council member for Ward 5 as of this evening.
Thank you.
We'll be right back. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. 5 days a week, The Morning Voice is on from 7 to 9. Five different hosts, five different topics, and a little bit of politics sprinkled in most everywhere, but definitely on Tuesdays and Thursdays, you can probably get a lot of politics. So I want to welcome back Selena Barajas, the candidate. You're still officially the candidate for Ward 5 in the city of Tucson. And I appreciate you bringing up the other things on the ballot. And that's part of the reason that we try to keep emphasizing so much about people need to vote. Plan Tucson, the TUSD school board, which override, which is important. And for those that live in Flowing Wells and Sunnyside, there's also school support issues. So I really appreciate that you brought that up earlier.
Yeah, no, and it's really important because this affects, you know, everyone, all the families in the area.
Well, what does the rest of your day look like today?
Well, you know, it's right now I'm just here at El Pueblo for the next few hours and just, you know, on social media, that has been a big thing for me is communication, just making sure that I'm trying to reach as many people as I can throughout this campaign, whether that's through canvassing, one-on-one, door knocking. You know, through our mailers, social media has been a big thing of trying to get our younger voters, you know, getting those numbers up because that has been also a very low turnout historically. And we're really trying to get, you know, reach more people. We had about 10 interns throughout our, you know, primary through our general help us out. And social media really helped bring out the vote. So we're trying to reach them through social media, showing them where the voting centers are at. And I'm going to be here. And then we're going to do some lid drops throughout the day. So just not door knocking, but just reminding folks, you know, of some voting locations, voting center locations throughout the city of Tucson where they could drop off their last minute ballots or vote in person. So we'll be doing some lid drops, and then I'm going to attend my daughter's basketball, middle school basketball game, and then we'll go to Hotel Congress tonight for our election night watch party to see the results live with community and, yeah, cheer on those results.
Well, that's outstanding. I know you have two daughters, and at least one of them's a basketball player. So that's always good. Basketball's in my heart in a lot of ways for a lot of reasons. One of the things you talked about having an urban planning degree, and you've done a lot of work in the communities and the storytelling south of 22nd Boulevard and other areas. But you've also opened a business, and it's actually in South Tucson, and that's you and your husband are opening Luna. Luna East Soul Cafe. Can you kind of talk about that and how that project came into existence?
Yeah, you know, it's been, it's truly been a labor of love. You know, this vision really started when I was an undergrad student at the University of Arizona. I love coffee, and coffee has helped me get through education and now through my career, you know, whenever I have meetings, whenever I have late night sessions, when I have to write proposals, it's always coffee next to me. And when I have early mornings like today, waking up at 5 a.m., it's coffee. And South 22nd Street, there's not too many locally owned coffee shops, you know, and I love to support local. Well, I love to support local mom and pops, and I think there's something special about supporting local. And when I left Tucson and when I moved back, I noticed there wasn't a lot of locally owned coffee shops a decade later. And I told my husband I wanted to really invest in a local. I wanted us to purchase a commercial building, and I wanted us to invest in an area where my great-grandparents, my mom grew up in the city of South Tucson. And if you're listening and if you don't know the city of South Tucson, it's a city within the city of Tucson. It's a 1.2 square mile radius city, completely surrounded by the city of Tucson, borders Ward 5 and Ward 1. But it has its own jurisdiction, its own mayor and council, police, fire, and, you know, it has its rich history. And we were fortunate to purchase a building a couple years ago, and we've been in the process of restoring a 50-plus-year-old building, a historic building. And it's taken us a long time because, you know, a lot of updates and upgrades of restoring this historic property from plumbing, electrical. But at the same time, we have created a urban sanctuary, a bird butterfly urban habitat in partnership with Tucson Bird Alliance. So we've created a green space for this community. And we've received some grants from Miss Myers Soap Company and other, you know, grants too. So that's been open.
Well, I think that's quite the effort. You're not only now stepping up and running for public office, but you're walking the walk and walking the talk as well, with investment in that. South Tucson could absolutely use more businesses. SALC, the Southern Arizona Leadership Council, we believe that that's how we address a lot of our community issues is through jobs and opportunities. That gives people a long-lasting chance. So I appreciate you joining us today. I hope you enjoy the rest of your day and enjoy tonight. And I look forward to talking with you again, both in person, and we'd love to have you back on the radio after you get actually sworn in and start doing the yeoman's work of being a council member in the city of Tucson.
Thank you. No, I appreciate it. I appreciate this opportunity, Ted, and a lot more conversation and a lot more coffee to come.
Absolutely, Selena. I appreciate it. And I'm not going to say congratulations. I know it's not over until the vote's in. You continue to get the work out there. Best of luck.
Thank you so much. Thank you.
Take care. That's the voice of Selena Barajas, the only candidate on the ballot today for Ward 5. But again, it's important that you all get out and vote, because in the city of Tucson, if you've got that ballot and it doesn't get in the ballot box, that's only on you if you don't like the results. So you need to get out there and vote and let everybody know what you're thinking. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We will be right back after the break with the founders and organizers of Rocking for Heroes.
Ted Maxwell, do you know who this is?
I'd like to say it's the Lexington Lab Band.
You know it. That's right.
It sounds like the original, which is an amazing thing this group does, is they make things sound so good yet still their own.
You can be able to see them free this Sunday at Cree Park in Oral Valley, and we're going to talk to Michael Quinn, the founder. Michael and Bonnie, I bet you, is going to be with him. Michael, Bonnie, welcome.
Good morning. Good morning, guys. How are you? And good morning, Ted. Bonnie's not quite with me yet. She was up burning the midnight oil and getting last minute preparations. But we're excited to be on. We're excited to be here anyway. And thank you, Ted, for having us on.
Oh, absolutely, Michael. And as we just referenced on our text together, is don't poke the bear. If she needs the sleep, you guys are absolutely in the end game. During the break, Steve Rakowski called me, who is one of your original team, what I'd call team of force, that got this thing to where it is today. And Steve obviously was calling to talk to me about the event this weekend and make sure that I knew what I was supposed to do. And great article today, Michael, in the Arizona Daily Star. Got to give the Star credit where credit's due. And they put a great article about Rocking for Heroes, about your and Bonnie's journey. And can you just kind of summarize what led to this happening?
Well, Ted, as you know, we raised our children in Tucson, Oro Valley. Moved here in 1998, and our son contracted bone cancer when he was 16 years old, and that took us on a long journey, and 13-year journey, and he passed away July 5th of 2020. And we really wanted to find a way to thank the first responder community the last year of his life. They were in and out of our home almost on a weekly basis as it went to his brain and he had seizures, et cetera. Anyway, after, you know, we took some time away from that and had some grief counseling and a lot of strong support from our church, we decided we wanted to find a way to thank that community. I'm a Navy veteran, and Bonnie and I have had the privilege of serving the Gold Star community for over 25 years, both locally and nationally. So the military community, the Gold Star community, are very near and dear to our hearts. We wanted to thank the first responder community. And this just all these things came in front of us, Steve Rakowski and others from the old Up With People gang. And we were able to stage the first event in 2021. This is our fifth year. We made the event free to the community. This was our personal journey to say thank you to those who serve our community, state, and country. And remember, we were coming out of COVID. So getting people together was not quite, you know, the fall of 2021 was just starting to happen, and we really wanted to have this you know opportunity to thank them. So I remember clearly turning to our former police chief Danny Sharp and saying, you know, at the end of the event, you think we should do this again? It was a resounding yes. We asked the audience, should we do this again? We had 700 people there the first year. And we had 3,000 people, approximately 3,000 people last year. And we maintained with the help of our sponsors, our presenting sponsor, HSL Properties, and many others, we've been able to keep this event free to the community. We were adamant about that people want to come alongside. What we found out in our journey was that others wanted to come alongside and say thank you too. So that's what Rocking for Heroes is best surmised in two words, and that's thank you. And it's to those, again, who serve our community, state, and country.
And those of us who have served greatly appreciate your thank you. I know the first responders do. The Rocking for Heroes, the four is actually the number four, and that's for first responders, military veterans, and Gold Star families. And every year you have absolutely made this grow. I'm anticipating more than 3,000 folks will be at 2 p.m. on this Sunday, November 9th, at the James Craig Park, which is at 23 West Calle Concordia in Oro Valley. You need to be there because it's a great opportunity not only to say thank you, to pay tribute to those who have served and are continuing to serve, but it's an awful lot of fun. So it's a big thank you, Michael, but you've made sure that it's a great time for everybody. Can you talk about what all will occur at the event?
Well, yeah, thanks, Ted. Gates open at 1 p.m. And it's open lawn seating, so you just need to bring a folding chair. We'll have 12 or so food trucks, a beer and wine tent, lots of opportunities for people to visit with our heroes. We'll have probably 20, 25 booths of various agencies, police, fire, EMTs, military, veteran service communities. The VA will be there, for example, with a booth. And this is all to support our heroes and or for young people to go around. We have a lot of kids' activities. We have Smooch the Donkey will be back from Track Therapeutic Riding of Tucson. And Smooch is a big hit with the kids for photo ops. It's a miniature donkey, and it's a lot of fun. There'll be other children activities as well. It's a family-friendly event. The gates open at 1 o'clock. At 1:40 p.m., the mariachi band will start us off with some music, really exciting music, and then they will do the national anthem. And then after our opening ceremony, we'll have where Ted, you'll be involved in honoring this is the 250th year, as I'm sure many of your listeners know, of the military Army, Navy, Marine Corps anniversary. So we'll be celebrating that as well as all our heroes, and open up at 2 p.m. And then the Lexington Lab Band, and Lexington Lab Band is the group that you were playing the music for at the break. And they are a phenomenal cover band out of Lexington, Kentucky, surprise. And we bring them in. We brought in out-of-state talent, some really talented individuals, both locally and nationally. And these folks are covered. They do a lot of covers. You can see them on YouTube, and they do a great job.
Yeah, their music is amazing. You can check it out on YouTube. And I think the thing is, it's a community event. It's free. If you go, please go by all the different booths, take a look at all the different entities and groups that are there supporting our heroes, as you were saying, Michael. And it hasn't been a lack of getting volunteers to help you set that up. Why do you think people are embracing what you've done out there so well?
It's funny you say that. We actually have a surplus of volunteers, and I think that's a great problem to have right today. And people just, I think people want to come alongside and support this because they believe in Bonnie and I's initial desire, and it's that is to thank our public servants, and to have a day in the park in the beautiful Catalina Mountains. By the way, James Creek Park is alongside CDO High School, so you might have a problem finding James Creek Park, you know, on Google Maps or whatever if you spell it right. But CDO High School certainly will get you there, and it's right next door, so that makes it easy there. But the volunteers, we'll have about 70 event day volunteers. We have volunteers on Friday and Saturday doing setup and then breakdown on Monday. So it takes a village. That's for sure.
Well, there's no doubt, Michael, and your and Bonnie's vision, along with the help of Steve and an advisory committee that you've had put together, it's just really come to fruition. So I want to say a big hearty thank you. If our listeners want more information, they can go to Rocking Four Heroes. That's ROCKIN, the number 4, HEROES.org. It's a .org to get more information. If you can't make it there and you want to donate to support all the things they're doing, they've got some scholarships that they're awarding annually that are just amazing. I look forward to having you and Bonnie on after this is over. We've always done it before, but let's bring you back after it's over and hear how well the event went.
Okay, that sounds great. That's a plan. Thanks, Ted.
All right, Michael. We appreciate all you do for the community and for those four heroes groups that you've recognized, and we appreciate it, and I look forward to seeing you Sunday. Thanks for joining us.
We look forward to it as well. Thank you all. Have a great day, Tucson.
You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. We'll be back after the top of the hour.
Little Lexington Lab Band to take us out. We'll see you Sunday. KVOI will be there, as well as the rest of Tucson and Oro Valley, Cree Park. Gates open at 1. Festivities start at 2.
Good morning and welcome back. This is the Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. I was laughing a little bit as I came out of it because Matt Neely once again has proved that he is a jack of all trades. You have that timing down so well that you're able to stand up, sprint to the front door, let our next guest in, and still arrive at that microphone, Matt, exactly when it was time to do the lead.
It was close this time.
Well, you know, you've got it down. You've got the timing. There's no doubt. Before we bring on Leah Marquez-Peterson, a representative for the Arizona Corporation Commission to talk about all things energy. We've got another election call-in request, and let's go to Mr. Jay Tolkoff, candidate for Ward 6 on line 2. Morning, Jay. How are you doing?
Well, right now I'm a little bit dismayed. I am down at the election center at the Randolph Parks and Recs office, and the Pima County recorder has decided to prohibit poll observers from going inside the building to make sure things are being done like they're supposed to be.
Are the poll observers bipartisan? Is it a mix of people? What is it? Why are they not allowing anybody to go in?
There's one Republican and one Democrat poll observer, and they've been told you have to stay outside the 75-foot limit line. And they gave us an announcement that was dated from October of 2023 saying they don't have enough staff to monitor the poll observers.
So they need staff to observe the observers? Is that what you just said?
Uh-huh. Yeah. So the shenanigans.
And who's going to observe the observers who observe the observers? I mean, this is going out of control.
Well, I guess this is what fighting for democracy looks like in Tucson, Arizona.
And Jay, there are several things that have occurred during this election cycle, which we'll really debrief more afterwards. I don't want to spend too much time on it, but it is definitely disappointing that something as simple as letting the bipartisan, I'm sure both the Democrat and the Republican observer are disappointed they can't be inside to watch the polls like they expected to be and they were trained to be. So that's disappointed here. But let's switch it a little bit, Jay.
I find it interesting that the county recorder just said that they don't have enough people to staff 13 voting centers.
Well, it gets even...
Or poll drop-off, whatever they call it in a mail-in election.
We'll definitely unwind that. We'll unwind the fact that they don't let the observers inside. And I also want to underwind why this ballot, when it was sent out, had an envelope that you had to put your signature, your phone number, and your address on the outside of the ballot with nothing that you could put it in to prevent anybody who sees that ballot in the mail from taking a picture of it and having all your personal information. So there's definitely issues, but Jay, the important thing for you today is the desire and need for people to turn out and vote.
Absolutely, as of close of business on Friday, less than 23% of the electorate had voted. We had just over 70,000 people who had out of 300,000+ registered voters, only a little over 70,000 had voted as of Friday. I haven't seen the numbers from yesterday yet, but 4 years ago, only 90,000 showed up, and I just find it hard to believe that another 20,000 are going to show up yesterday and today. It is disappointing at best, and if we just saw a better turnout, maybe things would be a little bit different in Tucson, but I run into it all the time. So people are just say, it doesn't matter. Nothing's going to change. And we really, really need to just take that time to circle, put a pen mark in that little circle and drop off your ballot now. And, a few days ago, you could have just mailed it in, which would have been easy. It's disheartening. I'm still optimistic that there's a win in my future here.
Well, I think that's a positive attitude that you need to keep because it's been a long haul. And as a first-time candidate, what is your biggest takeaway from what your experience has been like to this point?
My biggest takeaway, believe it or not, it's been an amazing journey. I have met so many great people that live in Tucson that are engaged and care. Even from both parties, I can't tell you the number of people that have written to me who are Democrats saying, they've studied the issues and they really like what I have to say. It's too bad that you're running as a Republican because I can't support you. But, it's really, really interesting to see the number of people that are, make things happen in Tucson. And, the other takeaway wise, gosh, it's it's just that's all I can say. It's been a great experience, and I wouldn't give this up for anything. It was terrific. It really was.
Well, I know it's there's a lot of folks that have appreciated your position out there. You know, I think one of the biggest compliments in some ways is a lot of people don't know what your party affiliation is. I mean, obviously it's on the ballot as an R. The R's question that, the D's question. I mean, it is truly a nonpartisan race, and 28 of the 29 cities in the state of charter cities in the state of Arizona have nonpartisan local elections, and local elections should be above politics. But as you mentioned, there's a lot of people that don't understand they can vote across party lines. You don't have to vote just so that you get to say you voted for the winner. And I appreciate that you're kind of making some headway in that front when it comes to this local election.
Well, one thing's for sure. I think that I've had a bit of impact on things in Tucson. I don't think that the mayor would have come out with her Safe City initiative had, you know, the Teamsters and I showed up and made a big deal about the safety on the buses.
Nor three sweeps of or raids or whatever you want to call it along the river trail. That wouldn't have happened.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I'm not going to go away. Win or lose, I'm going to be a factor, and I'm going to continue to beat the drum about things that are obviously easy issues to deal with. We just need to focus on what's really important to the people of Tucson and start listening to the people of Tucson rather than listening to the vision of a few leaders in our mayor and council.
So what does the rest of your day look like, Jay?
Well, we're having a watch party at the Silver Room, which is a local neighborhood bar on South Plummer, where we're going to have an Italian buffet and karaoke, and we're just going to have fun, win or lose. And so I just got to coordinate all that stuff to make sure it all shows up on the right time. Just kind of go around and replay signs at polling centers as they disappear. And, you know, somebody said, well, I bet you're going to be glad that the stress is over from this. And I said, I was in the restaurant business. This is not stress at all.
Yeah. I'll complete that sentence for you when you're off the air. I've got, so hang on. So just to recap, there was a process drawn up where observers would be at the polls, and then there was procedures done up. There were people assigned. You were told that you show up. You had a Republican and a Democrat showed up per their assignment, per the plan at the poll, and then this morning they say you can't do it because we don't have enough people here today. Is that?
Yeah, it's very standard to have observers at any polling location.
And these two were assigned, and everybody knew they were coming.
Well, I couldn't tell you if everybody knew they were coming, but I know the parties authorized these people to be here.
Ted, we talked. Go ahead. I was just going to say, Ted, we've talked about this a lot. You look at the vacancy report every month coming out of the county. Pima County Attorney's Office is just wildly understaffed, like 80 people. You look at the Elections Department every month, just totally understaffed. You look at the Recorder's Office every month, tons of vacant positions, many of them more than 90 days, a bunch of them over a year or whatever the longest period is on that's recorded in that column on that report. And just this chronic understaffing. They say, oh, we don't have enough people at the polls, so you can't have observers.
Oh, Matt, there's
Jen Lesher on. She said, oh, none of that matters in the course of anything.
Matt, obviously our unemployment rate in this region must be really, really low.
Right.
Okay, it's not. So, Jay, I want to go back and give you one last chance. Last message you have to anybody who's still sitting on their ballot.
Get out and vote. You can go to the Pima County Recorder's Office, see a list of polling places. If you don't have your ballot, you've lost your ballot, the dog ate your ballot, you can come down to any of these polling centers that say, you know, that, and it will say the ones that have printable ballots. Just make sure you get out there and you know, put in your opinion, make a difference, make a change, and get out there and vote today. Polling locations close at 7 o'clock tonight.
And I think it's real important. We say it all the time. This is your most sacred right, is the right to vote. Let's make it so the number of voters is large, and it sends a message no matter the final results. But we'll be with you tonight, Jay, thinking about you and everybody who's taken the chance, put themselves out there, and run for public office. So I want to say thank you on behalf of the entire community, because the conversation is important.
Indeed. All right.
All right,
thanks,
Jay.
Ted. Thanks, Matt.
Best Bye-bye. Of luck. All right, we will be back with Leah Marquez Peterson, member of the Arizona Corporation Commission. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, your trusted local news and talk station. Stay with us through the break. Good morning and welcome back to The Morning Voice. Thank you for staying with us through the break. Tomorrow, you tune in and you can listen to Grant Krueger with Food for Thought, his version of The Morning Voice. And you know that means food and politics. Sure enough, tomorrow he's going to have an election recap with former Tucson City Council member Rodney Glassman, and also candidate for State Attorney General on the Republican side. And following that, he's going to welcome Peter Anadrenstoski. Sorry, if I butchered that last name, but he's the CEO of Circle Stone Capital and is going to be discussing the upcoming Greek festival. So as always, Grant will bring you a good blend of food and politics. And so make sure to join him tomorrow from 7 to 9 on The Morning Voice. So I'd like to welcome Leah Marquez Peterson, a good personal friend and a friend of the show and KVOI. We appreciate you joining us.
No, Leah. Thank you, Ted. Thanks for having me.
So you're an elected official, a statewide elected official, to the Arizona Corporation Commission.
Yes. What is that?
What is the Arizona Corporation
That's
Commission?
Usually what people ask me. So again, elected statewide, which is interesting. And we are regulating private utilities, private investor-owned utilities. So in our community here, that's Tucson Electric Power. So it's electricity, gas, Southwest Gas, water, wastewater. We actually manage railroad and pipeline safety. We handle securities fraud, and then we incorporate every business in the state. So it's a lot that's on our plate, but most folks know us for TEP and Southwest Gas in this community and the more than 350 water utilities we regulate.
So are you the Pima County or the Southern Arizona representative to the
Corporation
Commission?
No, though I love Southern Arizona. I lived here most of my life. I'm still statewide, so often people ask, where do you work? And I say, in my car, because I'm driving all over the place talking to folks and meeting with different utilities, but proud to live in Tucson.
So why did you make the decision to run for Corporation Commission?
It's interesting. If you recall back in 2017, I ran for Congress after having served as president of the Tucson Hispanic Chamber for almost 10 years. It was 9 years.
Yeah, that's
some.
How we first connected, right? When I came out of the military and got involved in SLC, and you were at the
right,
chamber.
At the chamber, and loved it. Loved being at the chamber. Just went to their gala. Wonderful event. So I had run for Congress and had won the primary, but lost the general election, and decided to leave the chamber at that point. Kind of leap without a net, I told folks. Let's see what's next. So I started thinking consulting. I was going to stay in Tucson and do work in the Phoenix area also, in advocacy, small businesses, and so on. When I got a call out of the blue from Governor Ducey's team, and they said, the governor had endorsed my race, had been a supportive friend for many years, and he had a vacancy coming in to the Corporation Commission and wanted to appoint me. I didn't know a lot about it. I probably knew as much as a lot of the listeners knew, and did some research and said I'd be honored to serve. If I can live anywhere in the state and serve the entire state, I would do so. And he appointed me in May of 2019. But I also understood that to be appointed, I had to run statewide for election for the first time in 2020, which I was successful at, and again in 2024. So I've won my two terms, and there's a two-term limit. So I'll be a commissioner for the next 3 years, and then off to something different.
Okay, you opened up a whole question for later in the show. So yeah. Because you were appointed, did that mean you had to run at the next election cycle?
Right. So I had about 6 months or so of a break from elections, because I had just done the congressional run in Southern Arizona, and then launched my election for the first time to the commission. And remember what was happening at that time. That's COVID, global pandemic, world shut down. So someday I'm going to write a book, Ted, on how do you run for statewide office during a global pandemic? and how do you be successful at it and just get out there everywhere you can that folks will listen to you?
Now, are all five commissioners on the same election cycle, or is there staggered?
We're staggered. So three of us just ran in 2024, and we ran on a ticket, Rachel Walden, Renee Lopez, and myself. And they both live in the Phoenix area. So it was a good fit. We really covered the whole state. And this election, it's Kevin Thompson and Nick Myers who are up for re-election.
And it is a partisan race, correct?
It is, yeah. So that we are all five Republicans. And we ran on a slate, three Republicans, and did well. I mean, we talked about the importance of energy reliability, affordable utility rates, and talked about it in every corner of the state that folks would bring us in.
When was the last time that you had a fully unanimous board as far as, or partisan board, I should say?
Yeah, bipartisan board. I don't know the exact year, but it was prior to me being there. When I have served prior to this, it's been with a mixed board.
Right.
But I would say it was probably in the, 2015, 2013, something like that.
So I know it sure makes policy making maybe a little easier, not totally, because I know right. You all still have disagreements on there. But do you believe that's made you more, the commission more effective over the last couple of years?
I think it's easier in that I just ran with Rachel Walden and Renee Lopez. So we had a lot of conversations about our priorities, about important values throughout the state and to the community. So I know a lot of what they think about. And then having served with Kevin Thompson and Nick Myers for the last several years, we're like-minded, certainly as we're all Republican. We do not always agree. We have a lot of unanimous votes, but not 100%. And I think that's important. We need to have that dialogue and that discussion.
So prior to your election, was there a Southern Arizona representative on the board?
Years and years ago, we had a gentleman named Paul Newman who served. I don't know what year that was, but I think he was the only other.
Well, I think it's real important, obviously, with not only the size of Pima County, but the growth and the,
sure,
the utility requirements, that we have a voice. So thank you for making that run as well. We won't talk about 4 years from now, but what are your biggest concerns that the commission's having to address?
Incredible energy load, Ted. I mean, we are seeing in the Phoenix area in particular, 40% demand for energy over the next, I'd say, 5 or 6 years at this point. We've heard that by both APS and SRP, which are the largest utilities up there. We only regulate APS, not SRP. So I think it's how to manage that load, ensure that we have the right infrastructure for reliable energy. We don't want to see rolling blackouts like they've seen in California and other places. And then make sure that these rates are affordable, that this is something that makes sense, is kind of just and reasonable, are the terms we use at the commission as part of our utility rates. And it's a constant balance. When I do presentations at chambers and rotaries and so on, and in different groups throughout the state, I show up kind of a balance in my PowerPoint slides. It says, it talks about some of the tough decisions we've had to make, but we need to ensure we have the right infrastructure.
So what do you believe it is? Well, first off, a question came up in my mind when you mentioned SRP.
Yes.
So I personally thought you controlled all the power entities in this region. Why not SRP?
They're a quasi-public-private organization that was started by the farmers in that particular area of Phoenix, and they vote on their board. They're a nonprofit organization. It's structured entirely different animal. They still come before us for certain items, but we don't set their rates. Their board of directors does that.
So is that true about others? What about Trico and any of the other?
Right. So in electricity, we have Arizona Public Service and Phoenix TEP. We have the 7 electric retail co-ops, which for us down here is Trico, Sulphur Springs. We have the Graham co-op. So a bunch of others throughout the state. But those are, again, nonprofits with boards of directors, a little different. And we do a lot to honor the votes that their boards make to ensure that we're, you know, reaching out and engaging with the community in terms of what their priorities are.
So I think there's probably a misconception on people, and do municipalities and other areas have their own private power supply sources, or because those 7 co-ops, APS, TEP, UNS, do they actually supply all the power throughout the state other than that given by SRP, or are there other little smaller entities too that you don't have any control over?
Yeah, good question. So why does the commission exist? In essence, we're regulating monopolies. So when you moved to your home or your business, you didn't get a choice, right? You were told, Here's your electricity provider. Here's your water provider. In some cases throughout the state, the municipalities operate their utility. In Tucson, it's Tucson Water. I get a lot of calls for Tucson Water. I send them to the mayor and council to answer those questions. But TEP, the co-ops, and others, those are operated privately, but either for-profit or nonprofit.
I think that's a great explanation. I mean, just the fact that you what you stated there is your oversight provides to those entities that you could see are monopolies, and the citizens don't have a choice.
Right. And this is the same across the nation. So whether your listeners moved here from Illinois or Minnesota, whatever it may be, there are commissions like this one in every state across the country. And we gather and we share best practices and we learn a lot from one another also.
So every state's got the equivalent of an Arizona Corporation Commission?
Right. Probably called Public Utility Commission. We all share electricity, but everyone is a little different. Some manage, you know, the ferries in Washington and waste management. We don't do that here. So ours are just those that I described.
Okay. We got about 30 seconds, but real quick, do you also have oversight of Palo Verde, the nuclear station?
Yes, we do. Yeah.
And that belongs to APS?
APS manages it, and it has 7 partners.
All right. I've learned a lot already in the first
great
10 minutes you've been with me. So I appreciate you coming on. I thought I knew more. So please stay with us as we go through the bottom of the hour break. That's the voice of Leah Marquez Peterson, statewide representative for the Arizona Corporation Commission. We'll be right back. You're listening to 1030 The Voice, trusted local news and talk. Welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm Ted Maxwell, your host. Matt Neely's behind the glass doing a great job on the tunes today. I really like it. It's kind of like I'm back in high school, early college. You know, you're taking me back a ways, Matt. That's always good. Keeps us happy in this studio.
That's right. Happy like having a parachute in your airplane.
That's right. That's right. One way or the other. I mean,
happy
I tell
like
you,
that.
I tell you, that was the beauty about flying an F-16 is I always had a parachute strapped to my back, and I always knew that if something went really bad, the government's getting back the aircraft, and I'm going to be in a parachute coming down eventually.
Toodaloo.
Because I'm not going to save it out in the middle of nowhere. All right, enough on that. So with us today is Leah Marquez Peterson, the statewide representative. I keep saying that because everybody thinks you are representing Pima County, but you're not. You're representing all Arizonans, and you're voted in by all Arizonans to the Arizona Corporation Commission. So thank you for the first section. I learned a lot about what you do and where you go. You threw out a number, 40% increase in energy demands
right
over the next several years.
In the Phoenix
years.
Area.
In the Phoenix area.
Right. We've heard that from APS and SRP.
40%. It's got to be the same down here. What do you think is driving it?
I mean, if anybody's read the headlines, especially the Arizona Republic, there's incredible economic development occurring in the Phoenix area. So we hear nonstop about the addition of semiconductor industries. Taiwan, TSMC, if you've heard of that. The growth that's happening in industry and data centers in the Phoenix area. So they're getting so much demand. What we've talked to APS about, and certainly they're aware, is the priority are those Arizonans that are here. We need to ensure we have reliable service for residential, commercial, and industrial that are currently in Arizona, and then also deal with this incredible growth we're seeing. I've heard stats that we're number 2 in the country for data center interest behind Virginia, which is the proximity to D.C. For us, it's our availability of solar, it is lack of natural disasters, it's our availability of land. Our challenge, though, and a lot of this growth is water and energy. So we're working with our utilities closely on this demand and trying to determine what's real, how many states are different companies shopping, and what we should be doing to prepare and making sure that it's affordable for residential customers and it's not on the backs of the residential ratepayers.
And part of that has to be expanding our portfolio on our energy sources. I mean, we hear that there's more talk about, you know, increasing some of the dams we have, which will help with hydro and it might help with the Colorado River and all that. And for the record, does the commission have anything input or take on Colorado River management?
No, we do not. Other than we regulate 350 private water utilities. So we want to ensure that they have adequate water supply and work closely with ADWR, Arizona Department of Water Resources.
Right.
But we have our CAP board that tackles that.
So what are the issues that you as a commissioner now are dealing with on how to increase our demand? So, or our, not our demand, sorry, we're increasing our demand. How to increase our supply.
Right, so it's generation, right? So in order to have more power, either you're building a plant, which could be solar farm, wind farm, which is only in certain parts of Arizona, a nuclear power plant, a natural gas plant. Coal is going away per our utilities, not because we've decreed that at the commission. It's because it doesn't make financial sense to operate them long term.
Matter of fact, Springerville, they're converting from coal to natural gas, correct?
Right. So we have two of the units, SRP, TEP, have announced that they're going to convert their coal plants to natural gas plants. But if natural gas, you need a pipeline to that plant. So they've got a lot of work to do. But we're looking at whether they build it in generation or they procure it. So we are interconnected to other states through transmission lines. And we procure wind energy from New Mexico or hydro from Washington and Oregon and so on. We do well in that we're an export state, meaning we produce more energy at this time and sell that primarily to California because they've made their own decisions from an ideological perspective that have put their grid at risk many times with rolling blackouts. So we are seeing generation as well as procurement changes.
So you mentioned the transmission. I know there's a couple power lines.
Yeah.
The SunZia, there's the one down south. Do you also oversee those transmission lines? Are you the final approval of?
We are in for the state of Arizona, yes. I mean, there's a federal body that manages that interconnection across state lines. But in the state of Arizona, yes, we have a line siting committee that we appoint 10 to 12 folks to throughout the state. And they handle the public hearings and they meet with folks and then come before us with a recommendation on an interconnection is how we describe it.
Yeah, interconnection, that's transmission, interconnection, that makes good sense because it's important that we understand that it's not all coming from us. So you mentioned that we export excess energy. Now, we can obviously stop those exports. I don't know what kind of contracts they're under to help give us a bigger supply. But what is it that allows us as a state to, this is one of my favorite topics, I think you know where we're going, allows us as a state to export energy?
So we have an abundance of solar, right, obviously, in Arizona with our heat. So what we do, I'll start here. Each utility, let's say TEP, since we live down in this area, you can go to TEP.com and read their Integrated Resource Plan, IRP. So if you go to their website, just put it in the search bar, and you'll see the 15-year outlook for TEP in terms of where they think they're going to be procuring energy and their plans as well as generating energy. In the Tucson market, we've seen a 1% to 2% growth, so not near the growth that we're seeing in the Phoenix area. But they're seeing increased supply requests or increased demand through the data centers and others that have been so controversial here. So you can look to see what direction TEP is going and engage and participate in that IRP process to learn what their plans are.
So one of the facts is one of the largest exporting of power we do is to California.
Right.
A state that has prohibited and are in the process, if they haven't already completed it, shutting down all of their nuclear facilities. And as a kid, I remember going past San Onofre all the time and driving, seeing the big, you know, the nuclear 1970s versions of nuclear power stations out there as well. Ironic that they're shutting them down, yet they're importing nuclear energy from us.
Right. So they are one of the partners. Actually, they own 30% of Palo Verde Nuclear Generating Station. And not everyone in Tucson realizes.
I did not know that.
Yeah. Nuclear provides 30% of the energy to the state of Arizona overall, but TEP is not an owner of Palo Verde.
That I knew.
It's located in the West Valley of Phoenix. So folks don't realize we have one of the largest nuclear power plants in the country. And what's really cool about it is it's operated with reclaimed water coming from the city of Phoenix. So, and I think it's the only one in the country that's operated like that.
And it's been in existence for how long?
Over 40 years.
So we haven't had any problems,
have we? Since the 80s. Right. No, even longer, I guess. Yeah. So we haven't had issues. The waste is stored on site. I have walked among the waste. I know that sounds weird, but it's in these big cement cylinders that's kept there safely on the property. And so the big debate really is if we're going to generate new energy, should that be an additional unit at Palo Verde Nuclear Generating Station? Should it be small modular nuclear reactors, different parts of the state? There's a lot of dialogue going on. And at most conferences I attend, that's what we're focused on is what would it take for permitting reform? What would it take in our particular states to see more nuclear? The challenge, though, is it's too expensive. So what can we do to whether it's federally subsidized or there are other issues How do you make a commercial application for nuclear?
So when you say it's too expensive, are you talking about the continued operation, or are you talking about generating new or additional growth?
I'm talking about new plant. So whether and who would fund that? So a lot of the growth coming into the Phoenix area is data centers and, let's say, semiconductor industry. We've seen activity lately throughout the nation. We can talk more about where you see energy providers partnering with some of these large tech companies and restarting nuclear facilities or putting small modular nuclear in their plans. That's all just at the beginning now. So we have to see how that progresses. And then ultimately that unit needs to pay the cost of transmission and generation and distribution to their site so that it's not impacting the grid and impacting the rest of the residents.
Now, do you serve on a committee as part of the commission, or do you chair a committee that is dealing with nuclear right now?
I do. So good one. Good memory. So I co-chair an advanced nuclear committee made of commissioners and state energy offices across the nation. And what we're working on is educating ourselves. So what can we talk about permitting reform from a national level? What's happening in different projects? You've seen a lot of activity in nuclear where you've got a Bill Gates-owned company partnering with the federal government or being subsidized by the Department of Energy. The Trump administration has been very pro-energy, nuclear energy, and Secretary Chris Wright has launched a lot of initiatives under the Trump administration's direction. So you see a lot of activity going on, and as commissioners, we're dealing with so many other issues, electricity, water, gas, railroad. We needed an entity in which we could learn and be educated about what's constantly moving on. There's an exciting project in Texas, Dow Chemical, putting a small modular nuclear to utilize the steam to power their manufacturing, not interconnected to the grid. That's pretty interesting. We can't do that in Arizona the same way because we're vertically integrated and we have a regulatory environment like we do here. But there's so much activity. That's why this task force was important.
And it's a nationwide task force, not just
a local. Yeah, it's a nationwide, right.
That's impressive, and you're co-chairing it. That's good. Thank you for doing that. Huge announcement yesterday.
Right.
In the arena of nuclear.
Yeah,
you want to share that with the listeners?
NextEra, if folks have heard of that, which is a solar kind of wind farm operator in Arizona to us.
You mean a clean energy provider?
A clean energy provider has partnered with Google, and they're relaunching a closed nuclear power plant in Iowa. So if you think of California has many closed nuclear power plants, pretty interesting. In Arizona, we do not have any closed nuclear power plants, but this is a real eye-opening direction because you see a clean energy company partnering with a tech company to restart a closed nuclear facility and in Iowa. So we're going to watch this closely and see how this progresses. NextEra is actually a vertically integrated, like a private investor-owned utility in Florida. So they're very large and diverse. But to partner with Google on this is pretty exciting.
Well, there's always the debate. Is it clean, reliable, sustainable? I personally believe it is.
It is. I mean, nuclear is a clean energy source. So I think it's something if we could figure out the dynamics of this, how to bring them on sooner, faster. The biggest challenge we're facing in the country, much less Arizona, is NIMBYism, right? Nobody wants anything in their backyard. So no solar farms, no transmission lines, no natural gas plants, no nuclear plants. So how do we manage through that? And so you see some innovative direction happening, I think, throughout the nation.
So the Google NextEra Energy, they've announced that they're going to restart the Duane Arnold Nuclear Energy Center. And here's the irony. That was just shut down in 2020. And it's going to take several years to get it started up. The plant's expected to return to service by early 2029.
Right.
So anything in your field with energy, it's a long-term commitment when
it
you
is.
Make a change.
It is. And that's why you see so many, whether they're state elected officials or federal, talking about permitting reform. Right? What does it take? Certainly public safety, health has to be the priority in all these decisions. But are we doing anything that's redundant or anything that can be expedited to help bring these energy projects on sooner than later?
Well, it's interesting to see somebody like Google financing this restart. And it shows that they have needs. When we come back from the break, Leah, I would like to jump into your opinion on data centers, on chip manufacturers, on those who are really driving this increase we're seeing on energy. Is it good for us? Is it bad for us? We'll talk about that when we come back with Leah Marquez-Peterson, Arizona Corporation Commissioner. Good morning and welcome back. You're listening to The Morning Voice. I'm your host, Ted Maxwell. Matt Neely's behind the glasses, always keeping me on time and on target. And Leah Marquez Peterson, the Arizona Corporation Commission, is a guest of ours. So, Matt, I'm going to come to you. I know you have a question. Hopefully,
yeah, thanks.
I definitely want to talk with Leah about data centers before the...
So about a week or so ago, October 22nd, Joe Ferguson and Kurt Prendergast wrote in their whatever their online news site is about Project Blue. They made this sentence, and I just wanted to get your take on it.
Sure.
They said companies put up big dollars to win a piece of the $1 trillion AI pie, while local residents worry about straining the power grid, then parenthetically, which leads to costly electric bills, and then end parentheses, and threats to the water supplies. Do you want to comment on that fact, on that claim that they made with no backup in the article that that data centers cause costly power bills?
Yeah, thank you, Matt. Good question. And I'll start with, when I'm speaking to a group, let's say a rotor group, we got to start with, why do we need more data centers? And really, for everyone who has smartphones out there, you're uploading photos of the cloud. We're using certainly ChatGPT and AI and so on. It's growing more and more in terms of its demand. So I think kind of arguing that we are going to see data centers, they've got to land somewhere. You've seen a lot of focus on this throughout the state and at the federal level. Now, related to how will this work, it's being discussed and analyzed as we move along. You've got five commissioners sitting at the Arizona Corporation Commission that have stated again and again, growth must pay for growth. And what that means is projects come before us, we're going to work closely with those companies to see benefits to the community, which they're negotiating with their county board of supervisors, their mayors and councils, and so on, and then ensuring it's not on the backs of residential ratepayers. What does the commission do in this? We manage rate cases, about 40 to 50 rate cases a year. And I want to point out to folks, we have a TEP rate case pending now, APS rate case, and so on, that I'm sure you've read about in the paper. Those are for historical spend. Those are the hundreds of millions of dollars they've already spent on projects, and they're coming into us for cost recovery. This is not related to Project Blue, so whatever comes up next in terms of infrastructure investment or proposals that they're making, you know, we'll see where that goes, and that it would be in future rate cases. And it's something that I'd like to see technology companies, data centers, and others at the table, much like you just heard Google and NextEra partnering on a project. That's a nuclear plant, but maybe there are other options that could be occurring where those tech companies and data centers are managing the bulk of those expenses.
Thanks.
And to your point, Leah, that's the main role of the Arizona Corporation Commission, is to ensure that the costs being put on the consumers are valid.
Right, that the costs are just and reasonable are the terms we use, that the investments are prudent. These are all kind of legal terms we use at the commission. And then ultimately, based on who's sitting in the commission seats, what are the priorities? For us, it's energy reliability. So that translates to, we've got to have financially healthy utilities. You can't bankrupt the utilities by not providing them cost recovery. And you've got to have the infrastructure to manage today's customer as well as future customers. So all of that goes into that analysis as we look at different rate cases and their financials.
So we've got about 1 minute left. You've got 3 years now.
Yes.
You don't have to worry about running again, and you don't have to worry about reelection. What are your goals for the next 3 years?
It's a good point. I mean, I am very involved at the national level. I serve on our national board of commissioners. And in the nuclear space, you heard about my work that I'm doing there. But really, my passion is small water utilities, which we don't talk a lot about. You know, that's not as sexy as electricity. But we have about 350 of them. And that's something that we regulate, that you ingest, right? Water. So we're doing a lot to do what we can to make sure that they're properly structured. They've got the right investment. We're consolidating where it makes sense. So you'll see a lot more work in water, I think, from me.
Well, that's perfect. That's a great place to finish, because you've left the door open for another conversation on another day. So, Leah, thank you for joining us today.
Thank you, Ted.
Appreciate your service and what you do. To all the listeners out there, thank you for joining us this morning on The Morning Voice. Tune in for Grant Krueger tomorrow and stay with 1030 The Voice for Win Tucson, a Mealy to follow. Have a great week.